with the third pick in the 2019 NBA draft, the New York Knicks select RJ Barrett.
David Stern with the announcement.
First pick, select Patrick Ewing. Basketball is back in New York City, my friend.
Hey friends, welcome to another episode of the Strickland Podcast Network's Mail.Bag. I'm Jeremy Cohen at The Coincidence, and we've got a very special episode today. It is a crossover Mail.Bag episode. First and foremost, because he was kind enough to show me around his hometown, well, now his hometown. I'm going to bring in Presidente. Prez, how are we?
I'm good. Happy to finally make the big time and join Mail.Bag.
It's a big day. So we could just move on without probably introducing the third person, actually. Okay, fine. I guess I'll do it. It is Schwinn, Schwinny Poo. Schwinn, how are you?
I'm great. I won't take offense to being viewed as a second-class citizen here on my own pod, but yeah.
I kind of wish you would, is the thing.
Yeah, you know, I am.
See, like, I want you to feel offended by that.
That's because you're racist.
Right. Yes. Well, of course. Yep. Did you think it was going to be something else?
No.
Okay.
And,
cool.
And Prez is light skinned, so he's in on it too.
That's
yes. I'm of the Fat Joe Jennifer Lopez variety of Puerto Ricans, which is still a lot of gray area in there in terms of what I can do and what I can say. So I'll leave that to your imagination, listeners.
Flying is not a problem. Let's just put it that way.
Nope. When I grow my hair out, I look like a conquistador.
Well,
great.
We've got a great start. It is. It always is. So we've got some fantastic questions here that I'm actually going to read for the first time that are presented in front of me. So they actually might be terrible. They're probably good. Probably great.
Before we get started, I would like to announce the Strickland does have a Patreon. You can subscribe to it. It has many tiers. The $6 tier that gets you access to this podcast every Friday that I do with Prez, Pod Strickland. You also get access to the mailbag that I do every other week with Jeremy and Drew. Furthermore, you get access to the Strickland Discord where we talk about the Knicks all the time, 24/7. There's live game chats. It's a fun time. There's further tiers. There's a $9 tier that gets you access to weekly articles by the wonderful Jack Huntley and Matthew Miranda, two of the best Knicks writers in the business. You also will get access to my solo podcast, Strick and Roll, where I yell about the Knicks quite a bit, even more if that's something that you're interested in. There's further tiers. There's a $15 tier, $30 tier, $50 tier, and $100 tier. Those get you access to a variety of further things like merchandise discounts, live watch parties, listening in on podcast recordings, even potentially hosting a podcast yourself alongside us one day. But whether you choose to subscribe or not, none of this would be possible without you. Your support is appreciated. And without further ado, let's talk about the New York Knickerbockers.
So we've got some fantastic questions here that I'm actually going to read for the first time that are presented in front of me. So they actually might be terrible. They're probably good. Probably great. But do you guys want to say anything before we get started on the questions? You know, I mean, the season just ended. It's a nice win against the Raptors after the Knicks beat the Wizards and earlier before that blew what should have been a win against the Nets. But I didn't know if you guys had any thoughts you wanted to articulate that you maybe hadn't talked about in any other podcast.
I'm not sure. I feel like I've said so many things that that I it would be hard for me to believe there's things I haven't said about this that I have not said about this team that I think about. It's who knows. I'm very happy the season's over. I am excited for whenever like the first kind of big
the domino
Yeah, a big X, but not even the fuck the dominoes. I'm waiting for the drama because you know that there's like somebody's gonna drop the first like expose on what we're on this season. But I think it's funny because like Nick's like this version of Nick's drama is still so much less dramatic than what we've become accustomed to, and I think it's interesting to think about like what we bitch about now versus what our problems were. Fuck for the most of the last 20 years. And yeah, I mean, it's something that's interesting. I mean, I still feel pretty good about this team. I mean, I still feel very good about this team, and I still think that they're in a better position than they have been in the last 20 years. I still believe that. I know, like, the Carmelo team and stuff, having Carmelo, who was, what, top 5, top 10 player, however you want to parse it, MVP candidate player anyway, that's obviously, like, better than anything we have right now, but I just really never thought that team had a serious chance at contending. Like, I mean, at the time, I definitely deluded myself into it. But realistically, not so much. This team obviously is very, very far away from contending, but like being able to be good for a long time is definitely on the table. Whereas with those teams, it always felt like we signed Amari, we traded for Carmelo, and it was like, we got, you know, 2-3 years to try and put something together. And obviously we never did that because there was just like not a very good path to doing so. Whereas with this team, you know, we don't have that elite talent yet. But I think the path to being good for a sustained period of time is there. So it's interesting to want to think about that. Also, I'm so sick of Patrick Beverley. I just want to say that. I don't care. I like this entire thing with him yesterday is fucking ridiculous. And that's not to like shit on Wolves fans should be happy. I'm happy they're happy. I'm happy they're celebrating. Good for them. But Patrick Beverley is such a fucking dork and I despise him and I wish him no success ever. And I hope that he gets embarrassed in round one.
Schwinn is going to just be the Alonzo morning meme when he has to deal with like Ja Morant's superior basketball based corniness winning out over Pat Beverley's losing corniness.
Yeah, it's just I can't deal with it, man. Like how he managed to turn this like I don't even know what he scored last night or anything, like, and I know you can contribute to winning without scoring and all this shit, but like somehow that game turned into like Ant is going off. Beasley was hitting all these clutch threes. You had fucking Nas Reed doing shit. And like, somehow, all of that got ignored so that Reggie Miller could just, like, praise Patrick Beverley constantly, and it somehow just turned into this entire thing about, like, Patrick Beverley being the most unheralded, underrated, undervalued human being player personality of all time. And I hated that. That was, like, that should have been, like, a pretty awesome team win and should have been celebrated for that. And it turned into like some other thing. And I did enjoy the TNT thing after. I thought it was funny. Like it is funny to make fun of like what happened, but I also think it's fine that Wolves fans are enjoying the shit out of it and that the team enjoyed the shit out of it. Just not Patrick Beverley. Cause fuck him.
That's fair. I would agree with that. All right. Well, now that we got that out of the way, let's go to our first question. So this is from @HammerAndHo. My question is what you guys think are some player comps for Obi, both realistically and his ceiling? Prez, I'm going to start with you again because of the racism, but also because you have been following Obi with the draft and now we're 2 seasons in and Schwinn and I are both Schwinn probably more than me as a draft person, but we kind of both admit, like, it's a crapshoot. We don't know shit. We don't try it. So why don't you begin with that, and then we can transition to Schwinn.
Sure. Like, so Obi comps?
Obi comps.
I mean, 45% from 3 Obi of the last month? That's a different player, or the last 15 games. No, jokes aside, I mean, everybody always said John Collins, and there's definitely some truth to that, but Obi passes a lot better than John Collins ever does, and John Collins was better at a younger age than Obi is right now. But something like, I don't know, John Collins with passing and without being an annoying asshat would be my would be my my comp. What do y'all think?
I think if he got more minutes, he'd be way better than John Collins. Because personally, I think John Collins is like very much a product of playing with Trey. Mm-hmm. He's fine. He's not a bad player. That's not to say he's a bad player. You know, he can shoot the ball pretty well for a stretch four and all this kind of stuff. But like, he doesn't really impact the game on his own. Whereas with Obi, you've already seen like, he changes the dynamic of how we play. So I don't know. Like, I think like Diaw is maybe like a Diaw with hops is the comparison I go to a lot, because I just think like that's the type of player he is. But it's not a great like stylistic comp, because Diaw
was defined by being not athletic.
Well, not just that, but Diaw also like played a lot more inside than Obi does. Mm-hmm. We've seen more of that from Obi, like obviously as the season's gone on. The one I've always gone back to, and I know this is like very odd because he's very much not the defensive savant that that this player was. But like Sean Marion, offensively anyway, that's the player he reminds me of a shit ton. And you know, defensively, obviously not in the same caliber. So I don't know, something like that. Like one of these guys that's more of a tweener.
I actually like that a lot on offense.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just like very excited about him. I think he's like he's a very exciting player, easy player to root for. But, you know, realistically, what's he going to be? It's so hard to say because the sample on him is so small. Realistic, like, you know, we just haven't seen enough of him through 2 years, which, you know, thank you, Tom Thibodeau. But like, it's really hard to know what a realistic comparison is for him, because he's such a, like, the circumstances of him as a player have been so weird, right? Like, he got drafted at 20, he was basically 23 his rookie year, 24 now. Like, he's a late bloomer, he hasn't played much, and then this year he took a leap, but he still didn't play much, and then when we finally got to see him, like, he was actually playing very much to his per 36 per 100 possession, like all the rate stats that people were like, well, let's see what he would do in more minutes. Like, he did it. So I have no clue. It's very weird. His rate stat production, I mean, I've posted it. If you compare it just offensively, because obviously he's not the same defensive player, but offensively, if you compare it to Scottie Barnes, like, it's, you know, he doesn't look bad. It looks pretty fucking good. He's really, really efficient. And, you know, I don't know what to make of all that, but realistically, I think he's like he's a solid starting player. You know, he has flaws obviously, but I think he's a solid starter for sure at the very least. And then again, for ceiling, I don't know, like some kind of offensive version of Sean Marion with nowhere near the defensive impact. Not to say he's a terrible defender, but I think he's more of just like a good team defender type of dude without somebody, rather than somebody who's going to like anchor your defense and make major impact.
So for what it's worth, at least on the, speaking of the numbers, I was curious. I looked at Cleaning the Glass just now, and Obi's season defending, or like his opponent's shooting accuracy, he's in the 86th percentile in effective field goal percentage. Whereas John Collins' best season was coincidentally this year, and it was the 78th percentile. The fact that Obi's so good around the rim, as well as, I understand the rebounding aspect of it, but it's all the more frustrating that he wasn't deployed more with Randall, because like the whole thing was, oh, who's going to collect the rim? You know, who's going to protect the rim? And Obi could easily have done it. I guess you could argue with the rebounding factor, but like, it's still a mismatch worth doing. And when you bring in Alec Burks, when all your centers are gone, like they did in the Timberwolves game, then that's kind of a problem. But yeah, I mean, in terms of comps, like, sure, I think both of those work, but I also feel like he's more athletic than John Collins. Like, the fact that he's always cutting, or at least breaking out. I know Collins is good in transition, but, and maybe it's just because I've seen more of Obi than I have of John Collins by being a Knicks fan, but something about it, he just feels like a more creative offensive player that kind of makes more out of nothing than Collins does. He's a really good improviser.
He doesn't just fit in. Like, he does fit in. It's weird because that's like probably the best thing about him compared to Randall. But like, he fits in a way that impacts how the team plays. I don't ever sense that with John Collins. Like, he helps the team by just being able to shoot the ball at the four, like, which is valuable for sure. But he's not really impacting the style of play of the team, right? He's not.
He's an elite play finisher.
Obi or Collins?
Collins. Yeah. I mean, Obi will be, but Collins right now.
Yeah. I think there's definitely more there with Obi offensively for sure than just being like a guy who finishes what's created for him.
Cool. My hot take yesterday during, this is the last thing I'll say. My hot take yesterday during, confusing my podcast, during Pod Strickland was, I think there's more Obi face up one-on-one real Hooper scoring in the tank than people realize. And I suspect we'll see some of it next season.
I hope so.
Yeah.
It'll be fantastic.
Next question is from Stacy Patton. Given the Knicks' crowded rotation, does it make sense for the Knicks to take a draft and stash guy like Jang or Jovic? Is it worth trading back if they are at 12? So in terms of Jovic, I thought he was a draft and stash guy, but Prez, you're telling me that he's probably not, right?
Yeah, and one thing I wondered about that is like how much of that is like the guy's decision versus the team's decision, or I imagine you want to know if they have strong opinions before you draft them, which is why you have like interviews and all that stuff. But like, I never heard of him talked about as a draft and stash until very recently, because he's a highly regarded international player who, like, in the under 19 competitions was right there as like the first team all tournament, along with Chet Holmgren, Jaden Ivey, Victor Wembanyama, and Zach Edey. So like, aside from Edie, those guys are all going to be getting minutes in the NBA next year. So not that he's as good as them, but, you know, that's his reputation anyway. I mean, you could do it.
And do you think it's worth trading back if it's the 12th pick?
I'm not a huge fan of trade backs, but I'll let y'all answer the trade backs question, because I feel like that's more of a less of a player evaluation and more of a real like front office strategy. Well,
where does the draft drop off to you?
Depending on how it shakes out, probably right around there. It could be a little before, it could be a little after.
Wow. Thanks, Prez. A lot of fucking help here, pal.
I am a draft guru, but I'm also a lawyer. So there you go.
I would love if the Knicks traded this pick unless somebody is there at that spot that they just absolutely love. Yeah, I think this is a pick you should be very okay. And obviously if you move up, then it changes every equation. But like if the pick just stays around 12 or where it's supposed to be, it can only stay at 12 or move down, right? So if it stays at 12 or moves down, this is a pick I would definitely look to move. I'm not sure what the value of that pick is.
Do you think it's more likely to move it down? Like what are the types of things you look for in if you are trying to trade it out? Are you looking for a low, like two picks in this year, or a pick? Okay, that's what I was gonna get to. So like, is it part of another deal related to the roster? Yeah.
To me, it would be like moving Randall to upgrade at a position. So that could be upgrade on the wing, bring in, like, use it as part of a package to move Randall and bring in a starting point guard or something like that. Like, I don't know. But
without roster baiting too hard, like, man, like, to give up this pick to upgrade at a position and move Randall, like, it had to be a pretty good player, right? Or am I tripping? Like, we're not talking Harrison Barnes out here.
No.
Just making sure.
Well, probably it depends on the value perceived of Randall and the 12th pick in this draft, right?
Yeah, like, it's something where it's like, could I do Randall, the 12th pick in this draft, and, I don't know, three future ones or something for Donovan Mitchell? Is that a deal? Right. Like, is that something that could happen? I don't know. If that is, then, yeah, like, happy to trade it out. Can I trade Randall for the 12th pick and Phoenix is like, oh my God, we're going to have to pay DeAndre Ayton, and we don't want to do that.
So for like a home run swing.
Yeah, like is there okay. or even a functional, you know, look, I don't like I'm not saying this is not realistic, right? But let's just say that for some reason Phoenix is like, we are definitely going to pay Ayton, and we really, really, really want Julius Randle at the four, but we can't afford to pay all these guys. And they're like, you know what? We will do Randle and the 12th pick for Mikal Bridges. Like, I don't know. I feel like that's a trade the Knicks probably should do. If that
way, we do that 100 times out of 100.
It's not going to be on the table. It's not going to be on the table. But like, right. That's not like you're trading for an all-star, but it's an interesting trade, right? Or, hey, look, I'll throw this one out there. I would trade the 12th pick in this draft for Keldon Johnson straight up. I would do that.
Ooh, you did DM me that one, and I don't like Keldon Johnson that much, but that's he's definitely like an upside-y player or whatever who's, you know, he's gonna get paid soon, Kentucky, blah blah blah. But
nah. He's a wing. I think he allows you to play different, like he adds to your stable of like, we're a young team that just runs people off the floor, and he's a wing and he can play multiple positions. He played the three and the four a bunch the last couple of years. Like, yeah, I really like him. I know, like, the Spurs have like all these different little young guys running around doing shit. He's one of the ones that I actually believe is like doing shit for real and not just like out there getting numbers up. Yeah, I like Keldon. I would do that straight up. I don't know if they would. I would be interested, actually. I wonder if they would do it because
Should if they know what the fuck they're doing. Because are they going to pay Keldon?
Well, I mean, they don't have any money, like, really. It's like DeJounte, basically, right?
And yeah, they've Doug McDermott. They've got plenty of cap space to work with.
They can pay him, but like, it's also like, do they want to pay him? And I mean, they've done interesting. They've actually, for once, like, started to do this interesting thing called trades. So they've acquired some first round picks. They've got three in this year's draft, I think, if I remember correctly.
They do.
So it would be interesting. Like, they have three first round picks. What are they doing with all those? If they keep them, then what the fuck is going on with your rotation? What's the plan? And are you okay with moving Keldon for another pick in this draft? Who the hell knows? I don't think anybody actually has any idea what they're doing. But that's one I would consider. Like,
I'm not.
Yeah.
Another trade down scenario would be like a Brock Aller special, right? If you feel like to you, all the guys you really love are gone by 11 and you can trade down to the 20s and get somebody who you like as much as someone at 13, which in this draft is really, really feasible, then just given the tendencies of this front office where they have guys, they scout, like Perrin scouts everyone. And Aller takes all calls. So, like, something like that, where it would just fucking, like, wreak havoc on, like, real-life Knicks fans for a couple of hours until they see, like, you know, what exactly happened or whatever. Kind of like a bigger version of what we saw last year. I could totally see something like that happening.
Well, the only thing about that... All right, so I guess the first thing is that in both drafts, the biggest smoke was that the Knicks were trying to trade up. Right, like first there was the Knicks are going to package 8 and whatever those picks were to get Obi at 5 when the Cavs were going to pick there. And then it was moving up to...
By the way, shout out Isaac Okoro for being worse than Obi Toppin.
Yep, Cavs passed on Obi Toppin. And Tyrese Haliburton.
That's right.
So then the Knicks moved up to try to get Tyrese Maxey. They fell short. Then they were able to move back 2 spots and get quickly. Then they last year tried to move up for Duarte. They could not, traded out, then traded back, and then they got Grimes. So I think the natural instinct is that they do recognize that there's good talent in the top part of the draft, and that'll be their first instinct. But like going from 12 to the 20s, that's just like, to me, that's just kind of too much of a drop. And again, maybe they do it. It's just, I don't think that type of drop is something we've really seen before, going from like 12 to like 8 picks or more in the first round, like in the second round for sure, but I don't know, there's just something about it that I don't know.
I like the idea of like using the pick to either trade for a young guy on another team or like kind of like what they did with the Reddish deal, right? Like, because to me the 12th pick in this draft is, again, this is for the record, I know absolutely nothing about this draft of worth. So take this for what it is, but my sense is that this is not regarded as some like awesome stacked draft. I know that in the past, like the 2020 draft was regarded similarly as not stacked and awesome and ended up being a very, very awesome draft, which the Knicks have benefited from. Not as much as they should have because Tom Thibodeau is an asshole. But not to derail the conversation, the 2021 draft was loaded, which everybody said at the time that it was a loaded draft also. This one, I think, and Prez, correct me if I'm wrong, people feel very comfortable saying it's not a particularly loaded draft. Not a bad draft, but it's not one that you're going to look at and be like, wow, there's so much star talent that came out of this one. So to me, like, if you can use the value of, hey, we've got this 4-year guaranteed contract, essentially, for somebody who has a young player who maybe they're not sure of, who has 1 year on his deal or 2 years or something like that, I would do that. Like, that's why Keldon is interesting to me, because they do have to make a decision on him in a year, or maybe they pay him this summer. Who the fuck knows? But like, the contract is, you know, it's winding down here, right? And I would be interested to see if 4 years of team control is attractive to them over just the one. And that's just one example off the top of my head, right? Like, you know, I don't know what the Hawks are doing, and I have no thoughts on Jalen Johnson, but like, would they do 12 for Jalen Johnson? Cause I know people loved him. Is that something that's available? Like, these are the things I would consider. Like, I'm almost positive Denver wouldn't do this, right? And they wouldn't do this because he's had a great second half of the year. But it's like, if Bones hadn't played at all, but your pre-draft eval was so strong on him, would you do 12 for Bones, right? Like, those are the kind of things I'd be interested in thinking about. Like, are there dudes from past drafts that you were really high on who maybe haven't gotten a lot of burn that you're comfortable trading this pick for? I mean,
Book Knight, like a perfect example of that would be, like, we know the Knicks really liked Trey Mann. And
we know OKC is horny for picks.
Right. The Thunder like Trey Mann, but they also have SGA and Giddey and Dort, who are better prospects or players than him. And, yes, exactly, Presti is trying to collect all the 23 picks like Infinity Stones. So maybe that's something they look at, and then the Knicks get another dynamic guard that they were really high on but couldn't trade up for, or something
that Prez needs in his life.
Oh my God, don't even fucking talk to me if we get Trey Mann, bro. We get Trey and Deuce? I don't know what I'm going to do with myself while both of them are sitting on the bench.
So that's the thing. That's what I'm trying to figure out with this pick, where if you trade the pick for a younger player who's got, you know, like Jalen Johnson, Keldon Johnson, whatever it is, like, players who have more or have less than 4 years of time left on their contract. I get it, but you also have a logjam in itself, right? Like, we're trying to find minutes for Quickly as is. There's still going to be all these veterans that are going to be here.
It would have to be part of like a larger plan.
Yes. Right. Yes. Like, if you can move, let's see. The Knicks have 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, let's do this. Six players on six vets on larger deals that will still
be here,
right?
Let's do this. Let's say the plan is this. We trade 12 for Keldon Johnson, and then we're like, we're going to move all of our vets, or the whatever, three or four of these vets, for Russ's expiring contract and waive him. Like, I know that I'm not going to get into why this is bad, Jeremy, and I don't care about that. I'm just saying, if that was the plan, like, that would be a functional way to use it without creating a logjam. That's my only point. Like, there's ways to do it, is, you know, and we've talked about this, like, can you hook Charlotte in, right? Like, can you get, like, the Knicks, Charlotte, and the Lakers? I do think there's a deal there to be made, where, like, we take on Hayward and his breaking down body and his MAGA personality, and, you know, can we, and then we unload some of like two or three, probably three of our guys we could probably unload to give them Lakers some depth.
Yes.
Yeah. To give them some depth. And they, and Charlotte gets a $47 million expiring, which they need because they need to clear some cap space because they're going to pay Miles this summer. PJ Washington has an extension coming up next year, probably. LaMelo Ball will be extension eligible for next year. Like, they have all these things that they have going on, right? So that's one where it's like, okay, if I can do that, and then I can be like, okay, Spurs, we'll give you 12 for Keldon. And this could be any young player, right? If you guys wanted to throw out, like, would the Pacers do 12 for Duarte? Who the hell knows? I have no, probably not. But, like, these are the things I would think about if I'm the Knicks. Like, are there players around the league that you like, that you liked pre-draft, that you had good pre-draft eval on, that you're comfortable trading this pick for, because I think they should be. I think that's like in general, I think that's something that's really undervalued. Like, I don't think enough teams consider shit like that. Like, hey, we really like this guy and we have this somewhat okay first round pick. What if we trade it for that guy? Like, that's why I liked the Reddish deal, even though, you know, me and Prez have talked about this a shit ton. Like, I wasn't the biggest Reddish guy, but it was a good deal in the sense of, like, you didn't punt on getting young or anything like that, right? You just punted on an unknown, like, whatever that pick was going to be for a pick or for a player that you probably have a lot of intel on from a variety of sources. So that's just kind of, like, what I think they should do with this.
Fun fact, you just answered...
Yeah.
The next question from Stingy. Would you rather have Reddish or the Hornets pick?
Reddish, 100%, no doubt. And I think I even said that at the time. It's not like even, you know, I'm just saying it because he's a Knick now. That was, you know, it made sense. Like, we needed a
player. And you didn't even like Reddish like that.
Yeah. I know, I didn't. Like, it was just, I understood it. I'm like, okay, 6'8 wing who, like, moves great and is agile and is athletic and all these things. Like, these are the, I messaged this in our Discord yesterday, but like, watching the Clippers yesterday and watching the Wolves yesterday, like, you just get wings, just get fucking wings where you can get wings, take bets on them. Guys like that size with that athleticism, those are the dudes that you need. You just need, plenty of them at all times.
I'm going to interject a related Converse question for the two of you. And if you feel like you don't know enough about the prospects, cool, but I think you do. So would you trade 12? And what's the lowest pick you would trade up to if you had to give up 12 and Reddish? Or would you just not do that?
Probably like 7 or 8 or 6.
Oh, wow.
Something in that range where I'm getting the wing that I want, because that's where those wings are going to be, right? Like Mathurin, yep. Sharp,
Griffin,
Davis, if you're a Davis guy, like those guys will all be in that range. So if you can secure the one that you like the most, I think that's fine.
So I feel like the closest comp to that is when the Wolves and the Suns traded 11 and 6 and included Saric.
You're so obsessed with this trade.
I'm upset. Well, hey, listen, we can't all steal fucking told you for the last 2 months about Hayward and pass it off as your own, but whatever. That's fine, Schwinn. That's your IP. Yeah, take it. Don't even mention the person who's on this. I've been saying
the Hayward thing forever, too.
Yeah, you said Hayward. You didn't mention the other part that I mentioned. Whatever. The reason I bring up that is because it's just a comp of what's actually happened. Like,
what was the trade again?
It was it was Cam Johnson. And it was the pick that became Cam Johnson.
Yeah, 11.
And then Saric went to Phoenix and 6 went to Minnesota. And that was Jarrett Culver.
Great player, Jarrett Culver, my son. Right.
Fantastic.
R.I.P. But
in terms of like what he was able to, like that deal going on, I'd say Saric was a better player based on what we know, because he was entering his fourth year. Cam's entering his fourth year. We knew what Saric was.
He was a better player. With less perceived upside.
Correct.
But definitely a better player, yeah.
Right. So if he's a better player, to me, that's still a better asset in this sense, because even though the ceiling and floor. And so it was like you're going 11 to 6 with a better asset. So in this case, I feel like you get closer to maybe 7, maybe probably closer to 8.
Which draft year was that? That was the
2018.
Zion, right?
No, it was 2019.
2019. Just what I said.
Yes.
Let me see here.
Like, that's the type of move where it's the furthest I'd go. Now, if you're throwing in the Mavs pick.
Wait, so time out.
I think you can get to 5.
So they moved up to 6?
They moved from 11 to 6.
Okay, that was definitely right after, like, there was a perceived cutoff between 5 and 6, so that's relevant. Because it was RJ, DeAndre, Garland, and then Culver, White, Hayes, Rui, Cam.
Well, and that makes sense because there's a perceived drop off in this draft after 4, right?
There's a perceived drop off after 4. There's this like nebulous area right after that, and then
where does the
like
nebulous area end?
So I think the nebulous area ends like 7-8 ish.
So that's in line with the idea of going with Cam, pick 12, and going up there.
I think that's fair. Would I do that? I would have to like, if the front office is like, we really fucking love Mathurin or Sharp drops to seven or whatever, like, I could get behind that because I like Cam, but I'm also kind of just like, eh.
Well, you know what I mean? the thing is, you're not alone in that because we know that the Knicks almost traded Cam at the deadline. Like, they acquired him 2-3 weeks earlier, and then they were close to shipping him out to LA along with Alec Burks. And so, like, the way it works with this roster is you have to move pretty much one of Fournier Burks if you want to give Reddish time. Like, Reddish should have time on his own, but the reality is that they have to go. And if you're not going to move one of them, then what kind of ripple effect does that have on the other? So if you're not going to see Cam having time and you view him as an asset and you want to turn around and be like, well, look, we gave up a first-round pick for him. I know that we lost half a season, but we want to recoup on that. It might actually be why I see them keeping him, because they probably see his value increasing over time versus right now. But
like, you know what happened? Cam gave them a little sneak peek, and they're going to be like, can't trade him. Look at what he did against the Clippers in the second half.
Exactly.
Cam immediately showed that he could listen to directions and not shoot mid-range jumpers and become efficient. And they were like, shut him down.
No, it's just like that's what he is, though, because he's got the size. He's got all the tools. And you're just like, if you see it, you're like, well, can't trade him. Got to keep him forever now. Like, you know, that's why so many people, when Atlanta traded him, they were like, I mean, there was, I think Dave Dufour tweeted this like a month before they even got traded. He was just like, I would hate to be the GM that trades Cam Cam Reddish, because like, you can see it, right? Like the size and all that shit. And I mean, especially with the Knicks too, I think the thing that was intriguing was like, when you see him and RJ on the wing, that's like, it's so much more imposing than anything else that we can throw out there. And that's like, you know, obviously Grimes has been a really good defender for us, but it's not the same level. Like, there's just no, it's not the same, right? It's just like totally different when you see RJ being this big, bruising, like, fucking dude, and then Cam with all his length and size and shit. It's just very imposing, I think, and that obviously offers a different dynamic than anything else the Knicks have to throw out there on the wing right now.
I'm definitely...
And even these guys, yeah. Like, are any of those wings that we talked about, like, big wings? I don't think so, right? Like, Mathurin is big, but he's jacked. It's not.
No,
like
Mathurin's 6'5". Johnny Davis is 6'5". And AJ is 6'6". And they all have long arms, but, like, they're not, like, over 7-foot wingspans or anything.
What's Sharp?
Sharp is 6'6".
Okay, so, like, that... See, like, this is... And this,
they're
so
shooting
this
guards.
Is, like, so this is like a very interesting question for this would say a lot. It would be very telling to like know what the front office thinks about it, because, you know, wings are wings, but like there's a difference between a big wing and then an RJ wing. RJ is like very weird because he's kind of in that in-between ground because he's so jacked, but like he's not really a big wing in my opinion.
No, right? He's not. I've been banging that drum for a while.
Yeah. Like Cam is a legit big wing where you're like, okay, like, when he stands next to DeAndre Hunter,
his standing reach is an inch shorter than Jericho Sims.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just like, I don't know. It would be an interesting one for me. I don't know if I would love that now thinking about it, just because those guys' size is not the same. So I feel like we're actually adding to an existing logjam at the 2-3 if we do that. Whereas if you keep Cam, it's like a 3-4 guy. And that's kind of why I like Keldon too, because if we do this thing where if we trade Randall, and we can consolidate some of these vets. I just think Keldon's really interesting because he is a 3-4. He's not a 2-3, right? Like, he's a 3-4. And having a couple of those guys now with him and Reddish, and then you have Obi, who's a 4, and maybe can play the 5 in time or whatever. Like, I just think that's a very interesting dynamic and, like, gives you a variety of looks that you can throw out there. So that's why I just picked Keldon. But if there's another guy of that ilk, like, that kind of size and all that shit, like I would say the same thing about them too. Like I'm willing to trade that pick for that type of player, because I think that is basically the type of player we're missing. You know, like I think the Bulls wouldn't do this, right? But like, would they trade it for Pat Williams? That kind of, that 3-4 type of dude is definitely the type of
archetype Calvin, I'm looking for. Not that tall, but he just plays big. He's like 6'6", but he plays, he feels bigger than 6'6".
He's just jacked for no reason. Yeah.
The NHL season has been packed with dirty dangles, hat tricks, and big wins. As the action rolls on, DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, has your shot to win big too. New customers can bet just $1 on any team and get $150 in free bets if they win. That's right, a bump in the win column for your team means free bets for you. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, you still have a shot to light the lamp. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Hockey Contest. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code THPN. Bet just $1 on any NHL team and get $150 in free bets if they win. That's promo code THPN at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. 21 plus restrictions apply. See show notes for details, which I'm going to read to you now, and I probably shouldn't have read that part. All right. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. That's in Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Wyoming. You can call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona, 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado or New Hampshire, 888-789-7777, or visit http://ccpg.org/chat. That's in Connecticut. 1-800-BETS-OFF, Iowa, 1-877-770-STOP, or text 7867 for LA, 877-8-HOPE-NY, or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Visit opgr.org. That's in Oregon. Call or text Tennessee Redline, 1-800-889-9789 for Tennessee, or 1-800-532-3500 for Virginia. Must be 21 plus or 18 and over in New Hampshire and Wyoming. Physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Connecticut, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Louisiana, Michigan, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See http://draftkings.com/sportsbook for details.
Two things to consider as well. The first being that chances are this pick isn't really going to see any rotation minutes anyway. It's going to take injury or complete garbage time for them to get in the game. But secondly, as the Knicks are essentially biding their time, assuming it doesn't happen this summer, waiting for a big trade, having a logjam of young guys, the 2-3, especially if you're looking at someone like Donovan Mitchell, makes a lot of sense just in terms of kind of filling in the hole that would be a Donovan Mitchell size for Utah and trying to kind of like just give up guys who have a lot of time left on their rookie deals or the most possible and just can shoot and play well. Like, you know, just high floor at the worst. So just something to consider as they are going about this. Because like, I know, Prez, you obviously love Tari. And I think that it makes a lot of sense to get someone like him. And I think he actually fits a lot of what the Knicks look for in prospects. But even if they trade Randall and start Obi, I would be surprised if they didn't go after some sort of, you know, veteran to take up minutes there at the backup four. And then if that's the case, then Tari's on the outside looking in. So it just kind of like there will be logjam problems no matter what. It's just a question of how much of an impact it has considering the trade that will be coming eventually.
Yeah, it's definitely something they got to consider.
All right, Jax365. So Alex refused to answer this a couple weeks ago. What has Tibbs been doing to avoid COVID two seasons in a row? Everybody on the Knicks has had it, but not Tibbs. And also, Prez, gun to your head, gun to your dick, which one of your sons, draft or in the NBA, is the worst?
I'll answer the second part first because that's really easy. Several of my sons are out of the league. I don't know where Grant Riller's playing these days. I'm pretty sure it's for the Greensboro Swarm. So he's probably the leading candidate right now. DSJ is technically one of my sons, and it's probably a wrap for his career. He wasn't rostered on the tanking Blazers, so not a great sign. So probably those two guys.
Well, he got hurt. He was on the roster, but then they cut him because he got hurt.
So I thought they cut him because he was buns. Yeah, he might have a chance.
Yeah.
Guess it's Grant Riller.
Schwinn, what do you think about Tibbs and his inability to get COVID, or at least to our knowledge?
Dude, Tibbs is like the ultimate Grinch. He didn't get COVID, so we never got to see John. Like, it's crazy. I feel like every other team, their head coach missed time, and even on our staff, Johnny Bryant missed time. I think Kenny Payne missed time. I think Darren Erman. I think like, all these guys missed time. Yeah, like all these guys missed time, but somehow Tibbs is like fucking. He wrapped himself in God knows what to avoid getting COVID from anybody. All like half the entire team basically had COVID at one point too, right? So it's crazy. And the other thing I noticed too, he hasn't been ejected once in 2 years here. Like, he literally has been on the sideline for every single game, for every single second.
That's why motherfuckers don't know who our associate head coach is, because he's literally coached the 100% of the minutes he could coach.
Like, sometimes I'm just like, dude, can you just get ejected, please? Holy shit. I want to fucking see what this motherfucker might do in your absence. I don't know. What has Tibbs been doing to avoid COVID? Making a deal with the devil. Maybe just like wrapping himself in 15 layers of Knicks fleeces that he like this, you know, he has that one Knicks fleece he wears. Just maybe just like wraps himself in that, but like with 15 versions of it. I don't know. I'm amazed by it. I think it's like genuinely someone. I'm surprised nobody on the beat's like, because, you know, like sometimes the athletic guys like Cats or whatever, they'll write one of these like jokey kind of columns. I would like to see, he should do that. That would be a fun one. I would love to know what Tibbs' secret is. Maybe like there's no COVID allowed in the Tarrytown practice facility, and that's why the fuck he doesn't get it, because he only shuttles between there and MSG.
Maybe you have to be miserable to get COVID. If you're miserable, you can somehow become proof from, or like immune from getting it. Do you know what I mean?
Like the COVID whole, is over, to be fair.
That's a good, very good
point. COVID is a hoax, obviously. True. I think this is the thought process that just went on in my head. Like, he probably just goes home, crunches his film, goes to the hotel, crunches his film, whatever. And then that got me thinking, like, okay, so he goes to his, like, hoops dungeon in his house or whatever. But then I'm like, what does a Tibbs house even look like? I'm so interested.
Have you ever watched True Detective?
No.
Have you watched True Detective, Jeremy?
I have not.
Oh, because like Matthew McConaughey is this raging alcoholic in the first season, and his apartment is literally just like a bottle of whatever the hell he's drinking at the time, and he has his papers all over the floor arranged on whatever he's studying, and there's just like no furniture anywhere. That's Tibbs' house, except he has a fucking, you know, what do you call it? Like a chalkboard or one of those whiteboards for him to draw plays and shit on the wall. And he's got a laptop where he pretends to study the data that all the nerds send him, and a bottle of Jack. That's what Tibbs' house looks like.
I bet it's more boring than that. I bet you his house, you know how like when you're supposed to sell a house, you're supposed to just make it very generic?
Yes.
That's what I bet what his house looks like. Just fucking like unlived.
Maybe you get immune from COVID if you watch game film 3 times every game. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, we only watch it twice. That's why we don't get it.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
Lame.
This is from Editor-in-Chief. And geez.
He's got like 15 questions.
Christ. Alex, you have your own pod. Why?
And your own mailbag.
Right. All right, let's start with the first one. Ask himself these questions. Yeah.
Alex.bag over here.
First one. Who's the guy most likely to get drafted way higher than he's been being mocked?
That's a good one. As much as I'm loath to admit that our Emperor in Chief has a good question here.
I think Mark Williams.
Oh, you're a fucking guy. He's not going to. I mean.
You say that. He had a good tournament. He's a 7-footer. He has production on his size. Yeah, but it's like he's mocked. I'm just looking at Tankathon. He's mocked in like what, late lottery, that kind of area, right?
Yeah.
Like yeah. I could see a team, because NBA GMs they fall in love with size all the time. This happens all the time.
It is
they
true. Fall in love with There's size. There's so many random centers in the lottery, like Goga and Hayes and shit like that.
And what else do they fall in love with? They fall in love with guys that have a good tournament run. Like he is, anyway, and he's from fucking Duke. Like, this is the guy. I promise you, we're going to sit there draft night, and, like, the fucking Spurs are going to be up at 9.
Or the Hornets at 14 or something.
Yeah, so, like, I'm telling you, somebody is going to read. Like, he's the like, he hits so many of the classic things that teams love and reach for all the time. Like, and like, he's not like a, he's not a stiff either, right? So, which makes it even more kind of likely. And then you, and not only that, but you see like, what, like a guy like Isaiah Jackson, right? Like, he looked really good when he started getting minutes this year. And I think when teams see like, okay, this guy was a center, like, maybe he's one of those centers that can just come in and be a guy. Like, I think he's fits a lot of the classic, hits a lot of the classic notes of somebody who to get reached for. Another one I would throw out there, without much knowledge at all, would be like EJ Little. I think he could climb. I think he's somebody that teams would reach for, just given kind of his scoring production and all of his ancillary stuff.
He's definitely a guy who could rise up because his stats are fucking crazy. And he's ready to contribute now, and he's the kind of guy. One thing I always look for this kind of question is like, who can go into empty gyms and just fucking light it up, but they maybe aren't bought as a really good shooter right now for whatever reason. And Liddell's shooting stats are completely crazy, but because of how he looks and how his shot looks, it's like, is he really a sniper though? But like, if he goes into gyms and proves that shit, you know, he's a big wing / small ball five who could shoot and defend. Like, you know, that's a guy who could rise. Another guy I was gonna say for the same reasons you did is Ochai Agbaji from Kansas. You know, tournament run, tournament champ. We've seen Duarte rise, right before the draft boards. Every year there's like one reliable older guy who starts getting a lot of buzz, and this guy is a phenomenal fucking athlete, a ridiculous shooter. And even though he's a senior, he's, air quotes, only gonna be a hair under 22, to 21 and change on draft night. So I could see him making his way up board, especially after like seeing what Grimes did. Other teams probably see that shit too. Like, that legit has an impact. The New York Knicks select. The New York Knicks select.